This is True North Story, the original podcast series. Learn, love, listen, live. Are you ready to discover your True North Story with your hosts, Tama Fulton and John Hudson Masserol?
Joe, real quick, I just wanted to ask you, where, because I'm looking at a map and I was equating myself with the Salish Sea, and where in the overall ecosystem are you located? Where do you live and call home?
So kind of right in the middle of the Salish Sea is the San Juan Island Archipelago, and there's an island that looks like a horseshoe, and that's Orcas Island.
Oh, yeah.
And I live on Orcas Island.
Oh, how cool.
We have been enjoying looking at your book as well. Thank you so much for sending that.
Oh, yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for the shirt.
Oh.
I have to tell you that my youngest daughter stole it last week, and I think I'm going to get it back.
That's awesome.
Wow.
Well, that's good news.
Yeah, she's good. Oh, that's a good shirt. I think I'm going to wear it. I'm like, I need it back.
Yeah, you do. Take a picture of yourself, or have your daughter take a picture of you.
Okay, I'll do that. Yeah,
out there.
Even my wife stood up for me. She said, "Your papa looks good in that shirt. I think you need to give back to him."
Oh, all right. Love it.
So yeah, thank you.
You know, the last time we talked on the phone, we talked a little bit about our premise here with True North Story, and it's helping be inspirational and motivational to folks who are looking for something bigger than themselves, reason for being on the planet for the time that we are. Obviously, you've had a journey. Did you always want to be a vet, Joe?
I think I always liked animals. I mean, even since time before I remember, my parents tell stories of me showing up when we were in Texas for a little while, a poisonous caterpillar and a swollen hand. And I was just stoked to have found the caterpillar and couldn't care less about my swollen hand. And I think as I grew up, my parents were kind of in the medical field. And so I was fascinated with diseases and things like that. And so I think when the two of those sort of things came together, my interest in wildlife and my interest in medicine came together, vet school seemed like a pretty natural progression for me.
So were you the kid that always was trying to rescue little birds that you'd find, or pick up worms, bring them home and make them pets? Or
yeah, much to my parents' chagrin, I was, and they were. I have to give them a lot of credit because they were quite tolerant. And I was just reflecting last weekend with a friend of mine. There were episodes though where I think I pushed their tolerance. I remember one time, even in elementary school, I caught a snake. I spent a lot of time outside in the woods, and I brought it home, and it bit my sister, and then it got away in the house. And my dad said, "What kind of snake was it?" And I said, "Well, I don't know. I haven't identified it yet." And he was just fuming.
Yikes.
He said, "You brought a snake into the house. It bit your sister. You let it go. You don't know if it's poisonous or not." I said, no, Papa, I don't know." He said, "You find that snake." And I ultimately found it and identified it, and it wasn't poisonous. And
thank
I had
goodness.
To show him the book and show him the
your
snake.
Your sister is really happy about that, by the way.
But, yeah, my sister. I could have cared less about my sister, you know. And then I said, "Were you serious about no more animals in the house?" "No, I wasn't. I was just mad. But really, think about how stupid that was." I'm like, okay.
Let me ask Joe, as we're talking about this journey as we get older and we develop things that are passions and things that are deep-seated motivations for us, the things we want to do, emotional connections, what role do you think our parents play in helping shape that?
Well, I think for me, my parents played a huge role. And I think that they, in the biggest part, but just being tolerant and supporting what I was fascinated and interested with, even though it was not something that they saw in themselves. And I think that, you know, that they were, I was lucky to have that. I think some of my friends didn't have that. Then it was harder for them to kind of follow that path of who they were and what they wanted to do, because they had to fight harder for that. For me, you know, I think I was encouraged to be the weird kid that I was, and other friends that don't have that, I think it takes them a little while to say, "Gosh, you know, I've built this career as an accountant, but what I really love is dancing." and you know, I want to get back to that.
Right.
To be able to follow that.
Right. Well, and that's why I wanted to ask that question, because I think it's really important that we, maybe there's a parent out there right now that, you know, has a child that wants to be a dancer, to use your example, and they want them to get a career that, you know, is going to pay the bills maybe a little bit more regularly. Not that dancers don't make money, but I want us to be able to encourage people to see how we can empower other people to really find their passions and pursue them and make their dreams reality, because I think that society benefits so much better from people who are working and pursuing. And I mean, look at what you've been able to do. It's amazing, and we'll get into that more. But I wanted to point that out because it sounds like your parents were helpful in your journey.
Yeah, they were. I was super lucky.
So when you go to vet school, obviously you're not studying sea life necessarily, right, Joe? So did you have to start off kind of on the cat and dog track for a little bit in school, and then, or did you always know you wanted to do exotic kinds of things?
That's a great question. Everybody really starts off with the same domestic animals. You start off with the dog and the cat and the horse and the cow, and then you get a little bit of chicken, a little bit of pig, that sort of thing. And some people, that's what they want to do, and that's great. For me, I had to have the bigger vision to say, hey, you know, we may be dissecting a dog right now, but this is really the same anatomy for a wild dog, or we may be working on a cat, but this is really the same anatomy for a tiger, it just in a small version. So you have to have that sort of a vision to be able to see the big picture on that. And even I consider medical school at one point. I worked at an orphanage in Guatemala with my wife before vet school, and I was kind of the de facto health person at this place. But I kept telling myself, gosh, if you go to medical school, you're going to be learning something. You're going to say, I wonder how that works in a giraffe, you know? And so the nice thing about vet school is there are people there that you can go to and say, how does this work differently in this animal? Because you've got to deal with this. And so there are people there that can answer those questions for you and keep you encouraged along the way.
So how did the transition, you weren't from the Pacific Northwest to begin with. You're in vet school, and you start building a veterinary practice. And then what did that transition kind of look like, Joe, where you said, maybe I want to pivot a little bit into this area?
So I was pretty lucky, John. When I came out, I lucked into a position working in Zimbabwe for the Philadelphia Zoo. And they needed a person to go over there and work at a wild animal park. So I got my foot in the door pretty early doing wildlife stuff, and that was short term. It only lasted a year, and then I came back to the U.S. and went into mixed animal practice, which is kind of the James Harriet, where you do dogs and cats and cows and horses. But I just really, I missed the wildlife, and I kind of missed thinking about the big picture of, you know, how do we save populations of wildlife. And that's when I went back to school and got a PhD. And while I was doing that, I was lucky to get a job at the University of Georgia. And so I worked there and went to school there. And when I had finished my PhD, you start looking to figure out, well, am I going to go back to the James Harriet job because I got kids' mouths to feed, or am I going to luck into something else? That's when I saw the job working out here back in the late 90s, and there was this new thing called a listserv where you got these emails, and I just saw a job advertisement. I remember telling my wife, because my wife had family out here, and we'd been to the San Juans, and, you know, it was a beautiful place, and I said, well, I'm gonna apply for this job. And she said, why? You're not really qualified. And I thought, well, gosh, you always have my back. But, you know, she encouraged me, and I applied, and so I just lucked into the job. But I was definitely didn't come into this job thinking that this is what I was going to do with my whole life. But I had a background of, you know, population medicine, and I had a background of working in science and getting science into management policy. And so that was a big part of the job. And what I didn't have was all of this training in marine science. I joke about how naive I was, but I'll give you a story of an example. There's a teacher here teaching marine biology on the island, and so I met with her pretty early, and she said, oh, great that you're here, and I said, oh, great that you're here, because I have a lot of questions. And about 2 weeks into the job, one day, she said, Joe, I have a question for you. And I said, sure, Patty, because I'm always having questions for you. She said, are you in a witness protection program? And I said, because I know so little. She said, yeah. I said, no, I just lucked into a job and I got a lot to learn. So for me, it was, you know, it was like drinking from a fire hose from day one. But the nice thing was I loved it. And so it was just a joy for me to learn. And I still am. I still am always talking to people and reading stuff and learning new things. And that's really one of the things that just makes it so fun.
It's funny that Tim and I were just talking not too long ago about the older we get, the more, or at least I'll take ownership for this. But I said the older we get, the more I understand how much I really don't know about everything. You know what I mean? And it's okay to say, I don't know everything. And you know what? I want to learn, and I want to spend, you know, every moment I have left on this planet trying to learn more about the things that I feel are important and just have weight. And it's amazing to hear you say that. Do you believe that you really lucked into the position, or do you believe more that it was meant to be and it was your career path and you would put yourself in a position for that to play out the way that it did?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I guess, I mean, I think that there's, for me, there's always a component of luck to things. Sometimes things just happen. But look, I did have a job. I did have a veterinary degree. I had a PhD. I had worked at the interface between science and politics. So I had a couple qualifications for the job that they were looking for. I think there is some lucky component to that. But I think, you know, some of it, I didn't luck into it as a hot dog salesman or something like that. You know, I had some background that they were looking for, convinced them that, you know, I'm maybe a little slow on the uptake for the first couple months, but, you know, give me some time and I was going to learn everything I could learn about this stuff and do a good job for them.
I was looking through your book, and we'll get to how this book came about, because I think it's amazing and just absolutely beautiful.
That's an incredible book.
It's, everybody should have this on their coffee table, I think, if they...
Thanks, Tamla.
You know, just gorgeous pictures of nature and just
The environment, and it's
yes.
well written, and there's tons of information in there. The pictures are absolutely amazing.
There's one quote in here, and it's in the chapter called "It Takes a Forest." When we try to pick out anything by itself, we find it hitched to everything else in the universe. A quote by John Muir. I think it's very poignant, and I wanted to find out how you feel about that, studying ecosystems, and we as a collective, we're all sort of connected, aren't we?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's kind of the ecosystem of life that we are all connected, and the influences of people, good and bad, and the influences of experiences, good and bad, really come to make us who we are. And that's something I think, you know, you talked about as you get a little bit older, John. That's one of the things that I see, is that you can go out there and be a positive force. You're going to have influences you don't even know about that are going to push things to be in that positive direction for the world and not a negative direction. And that's kind of empowering to think that, hey, I'm going to try and do right by what I think I need to do. And that's not just for me, but there's going to be benefits all the way along the line from that. The better off we are, and also the more we think about our own lives, how we're really all connected, I think the better off we are, and the better we'll see how we have an opportunity to make the world a better place.
Are you seeing kind of a shift, and we could talk culturally here, of people wanting to learn more, know more, be more involved with the environment and the impact that they have upon it? I mean, it's always been on the fringes, but do you think that's moving maybe more to the center now, Joe?
I would think so, and I may be biased, John, from my point of view, because I work in the field, but I do see that people are realizing more and more. It's actually within our own self-best interest to take care of the resources that we depend on. And even, you know, try and figure out the most furthest remove, you know, maybe you live in an apartment building in downtown New York City and you don't even notice there's a couple trees on the street, but, you know, where does your food come from? Where does your water come from? What makes your climate? What brings the storms in? Things like that. And so I think people are starting to realize that, hey, we actually have to take care of the earth, because the earth is going to be fine. You know, we're the ones that are going to suffer if we don't take care of it. And I think people are starting to recognize that and see that, hey, you know, we do need to look out for all of this stuff that we depend on.
This is True North Story, the original podcast series. And now, back to the program.
Part of what Tam and I are trying to do with True North Story is encourage people. We always say encourage and inspire and motivate and most importantly, offer hope to people. through our guests and through their stories and things that they've accomplished and how they've accomplished it and what is important in their lives. And I think more than anything, our hope is that people will think outside the box of maybe the traditional societal professions. And having someone like you talk about this, and, you know, you said a little bit of luck and maybe a little bit of fate and, you know, all of that coming together. But, I mean, look at the impact you have been able to have on the environment and on the ecosystem and on animals and everyone you interact with just through that process. I mean, and that you mentioned the word empowering. That's what passion and purpose can do, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think that if you really follow what makes you happy, what makes you want to get up in the morning, that's where you're going to have the biggest impact, because you think about it all the time. I think some people don't have the opportunity. My grandfather was a coal miner, and he didn't think about that on the weekends, about how I can do this better or whatever. I'm sure he did a good job when he worked during the week, but, you know, I'm always thinking about how do we make this place better? What do we do? What can we do? What's working? What's not working? And then, you know, it's like my life is a busman's holiday on the weekend. What do I want to do? I want to go to the beach with my kids and do something like that. You know, I'm always working on it. And it's because it's not work
right.
At that point. It's my passion. It's my love.
And you've shared that love through this amazing book, The Salish Sea, Jewel of the Pacific Northwest. Tell us how this book came about, Joe.
That's a great question. I've always thought that, you know, to get people to want to take care of a place, they say you want to get people to know that place. Rachel Carson said, you know, when we know something, we can't find it in ourselves to destroy it. We find it in ourselves to take care of it. And so I've always wanted to have a story about this place that allowed people to know it and to connect to it. And then ultimately that would make them want to protect it or take care of it. And those are kind of the tenets for place-based conservation: to know and connect and protect. And so I've been kind of working in that realm, but I'd never written a book before, I'm a competent scientific writer, but I'm not a great writer. But I do know a lot about this place, and I'm very lucky when I met my co-author, Audrey Benedict, and she is a beautiful writer, and she had written several books on different areas. After we became friends, she said, "Hey, have you ever thought of doing a book on the Salish Sea?" And I said, "Audrey, I think about that all the time, but I don't really even know where to start." And she said, "Well, let me show you a couple books I've written." And she showed me one called Valley of the Dunes, which is a similar format about the Great Sand Dunes in Colorado. And that book was very instrumental in getting that area declared a national monument. And I looked at that book, and I was just blown away. And I thought, gosh, if we can do something half this great, we have to do it. So I said, "Audrey, we have to do this. You and I, we have to work together on this." And so that's how the journey started. And we knew that we could put the words down, but we also knew that to get a bigger audience, we wanted to make it where people didn't have to read it from cover to cover. They could bite off a little section. Pictures would draw them in, that the stories about the pictures would be educational and interesting. And so we worked with a team, a woman named Wendy Chatil, who was a photo curator, and we got photographs from all over. We just got on the phone, called all of our connections, and she's in something called the International League of Conservation Photographers, people who take pictures to make a difference in the world conservation. And so she was able to connect to those people. I was able to connect with scientists, and then the book just came together. We had a beautiful designer and a great editor, so it was just a really cool team effort to put this thing together. People seem to really be enjoying it, and I'm really happy that you guys are too.
Oh, absolutely. I think if you love just beautiful photographs, if you love nature, follow the journey of a salmon.
It's super informational.
Yes.
And marine life and ecosystems and things like that can be, people's eyes can kind of glaze over and be like, huh? But the pictures, and then the way it's written, the way you and Audrey wrote this, it's very easy to understand, and it conveys information along with the photographs in a very understandable way. I'm telling you, I noticed myself picking it up, and then I can't put it down. I'm like, "Oh, well, I'm just looking at this," and then I flip a couple of pages forward, right? And then I'm into something else. I'm reading all about that, and it's hard to put down. And
I love hearing that. That's what everybody wants to have with their book. We've had people, like you're saying, they'll come up. Maybe we'll be giving a talk on the book or something like that. And they'll say, "Gosh, I never knew this. I've lived here for 30 years, and this is cray-cray. I mean, wow, this stuff is right off my backyard, you know." It's been really enjoyable. The Sea Doc Society, which is kind of like sea doctors, started from Orcas Island, came to the veterinary school at UC Davis, the Center of Excellence called the Wildlife Health Center, the Karen C. Dreher Wildlife Health Center. And they said, would you guys be interested in working up here in this area? We feel it's a beautiful area, but could really benefit by a program that worked on science and conservation and bringing people together and using science to solve problems. The dean of the vet school at that time, he said, yeah, sure, we work all over the world. We can work in British Columbia. We can work in Washington. And so they made a donation at that time. And that's really the, I think, a key part of the story is that those people wanted to make a difference in where they lived in a place that they loved. And they had some money to put into it. And so they made a donation at that time to the veterinary school to start the program. And I think it ended up being about $1.7 million. And this is in about 1999, 2000. And that was the genesis of the program. And I was hired a year later. They wanted to have a person that could be on site and administer grants and look for issues where we could make a difference and things like that. And that's when I came into the picture. And we've always been a program of the veterinary school. And people, we're talking about healthy wildlife populations. And veterinarians are really good at that, about wildlife health and population health, and are also good at working with healthy ecosystems. And then people say, oh, okay, that starts to make sense. And then when you think a little step further that, you know, healthy wildlife populations need healthy ecosystems, people need healthy ecosystems, it's really all this one health picture. So it kind of makes sense that we're part of the veterinary school. And UC Davis, the best veterinary school in the world, was just ranked second year in a row. They're not afraid to think out of the box like that. So I give a lot of credit to Dean Osborne and the current dean, Dean Larimore, to continue to support this, to say, hey, we're happy to be breaking the mold and going out and working on, you know, big ecosystems like this. A lot of times the exploration happens anecdotally. So we may be out doing something, like we may be out counting rockfish or, you know, measuring something like that. And then part of that is while you're out there, you're noticing other things, sometimes good, sometimes bad. And you're always asking questions. Hey, why is this happening? Is this a natural thing, or is this something that we're doing? And then that's the way that science works, is when there are decisions that could be made, people say, wow, if we had a little bit more information, we could determine if this was something we were doing, something we're not doing, then we're okay with that. We can back off and just let that happen and monitor it.
So that's more discovery and documentation. The reason I ask is because people who are interested in maybe making a transition from a veterinary, traditional veterinary occupation, and saying, hey, you know what, maybe there are other options open and available, like Joe did, just trying to describe a little bit more of what your day looks like.
Yeah, so I kind of give you an example when, you know, say we're out there a few years ago and we'd been doing a lot of diving and a lot of work on beaches, and people started noticing this massive die-off of these sea stars. And we were part of a really big group and team of people that started to investigate that, to say, gosh, what is happening? Is it a disease? Is it a toxin? Is it a combination of a disease and a toxin? Is it just that the waters are getting warm? And then, you know, we have over 20 different sea stars in the area, so which ones are being impacted? And so that's the sort of a thing where you're using your observational skills, you're formulating scientific questions, you're answering those, and then you're trying to make recommendations to people about what you can do about it.
That sounds pretty amazing to me. When I think about having an impact in everybody, if you were to say, and I know this is a totally loaded question, Joe, but I have to ask anyway. if you were to say, what single thing, or maybe I'll give you a couple of things, do you think are the most important for you personally in your journey? And it can be from your youth to where you are now, wife and family, profession and passion. Just what's one or two things that have really been guiding influences for you?
I would say that there are probably two things, John, that I would, if I had to whittle it down to the straight and narrow, and one of them is being able to acknowledge what you're interested in and what you're passionate about, being able to acknowledge that and follow that. And for me, obviously, it was my interest in wildlife and my interest in wild places and ecosystems. The other part of that is just this, I don't know what you would call it, but just a rabid desire for information and to learn and to understand how things fit together. And so I would say my whole journey has been putting those things together, you know, not just wanting to go out and enjoy something, but really wanting to understand it and know about it.
That's one thing that we as a society, it's the internet and technology has really enabled so much information. But yet I wonder sometimes if we're not even processing it because it's so much. It's like we shut down. And your hunger, your voracious appetite to know and understand and learn more about the things that you're passionate in as well as other things, I wonder sometimes if we just have to find that which we engage with, and then we have that hunger, then we want to learn. But if it's just information for information's sake, we don't hear it. It's just noise.
Yeah, because there's a lot of noise out there. I think you're so right. I think when it becomes something, it goes from noise to information. That's when you just are glomming onto it and you're wanting to absorb it, learn about it, and own it, and then share it.
Do you ever feel like you're just a very small part of a vast universe, Joe?
Yeah, I totally do. It's humbling because you think, you look around and even when you see something, so there's a table in that book where we have longevity. And, even when you think that a rockfish can live to be over 200 years old or a red urchin can live to be 150 years old, you think, gosh, I'm only here a really short time. And there's a lot of things that are going to be here a lot longer than I'm here. And then even if you start looking at geology versus biology, and people are talking about not hundreds of years, but tens of thousands and millions of years, you just think, wow, I'm just a little speck here. And I think that can be humbling, but it can also make you feel like, hey, I better get something done while I'm here because I'm not here that long. So what's my legacy?
That's what I was thinking, too, especially as you're talking about taking care of our planet so that we can pass along something great to our children and people that come after us.
Right. And to not be afraid that maybe what you start, you might not even see finished. But if you don't start it, it'll never get going.
I love that.
Yeah, that's fantastic. What can we do to help you, Joe, and draw awareness to CDOC Society and to other projects and things that you have going and could use help with?
One thing is that just to help people realize that we're all dependent on taking care of what's out there. All of our economy and things like that, our resources, we need healthy drinking water. Look at Flint, Michigan. We need places to recreate. Our souls need that. Go to Central Park or go to Green Lake in Seattle and see how people are just flocking to this natural space. We have to take care of that. And it's not something that it's not market driven. There are things we don't have to take care of the Seahawks. That's a market driven thing. People are going to buy tickets. They're going to go there. But these resources, the Salish Sea and our environment, we need to make an investment in that. And because it's not going to just happen by itself. So we need to recognize it's important and make an investment. And for some people that may be, being a teacher or a docent. And for other people it may be supporting a program or doing something like buying a copy of a book for a friend of yours that you think is interested in the area.
And we will certainly help highlighting the book as well as help draw attention and awareness to those things for you so that folks can get involved and can donate and do what they can to help, because Tam and I both feel that what you guys are doing is amazing. You should be rewarded for all your efforts. People really need to be aware of what's going on. Amazing stuff.
I feel like what you guys are doing is amazing, too, because if people don't get out there and don't get excited, we're not going to have opportunities to take care of things that are important to us as a society, and whether that's the ecosystem or whether that's the arts or whether that's getting kids educated or whether that's dealing with racism or other things like that. All of those things are being fixed by people that are passionate about making a difference. And you guys are helping people understand how to do that.
Thank you so much, Joe. Can we send people to a website if they want to learn more about CDOC?
CDOCSociety.org. So it's SEADOC and then society.org.
And if they want to find a map, they look for Orcas Island.
That's right.
Do you get a lot of visitors?
You'd be surprised. People a lot of times will be out on vacation and they'll just stop in to say hi. Pretty fun.
Joe, thank you so much for being part of True North Story.
Okay, thank you guys for having me, and let's be in touch.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you for listening to True North Story, the series. Follow us on Twitter @True North Story and tune in next time for another True North Story.